the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. So first of all, since we have just completed the joyous celebration of Navaratri, I hope everyone had a very happy and blessed Navaratri festival, and I sincerely hope that the past 9 nights were filled with the understanding of the divine energy of the Universal Mother. And today's show is going to be focused on Navaratri, and we're going to try to understand this whole festival of Navaratri a little better. Well, I was actually supposed to present this show on Navaratri last week, but unfortunately, because of some unforeseen circumstances, I was not able to do so, and I had to rebroadcast one of my earlier shows. So here we are today, and I think it is still appropriate to talk about Navaratri now, because the festival just got over and the spirit of Navaratri is still alive. And so let us begin with the history behind the festival of Navaratri. In fact, not the history, more like the story behind the festival of Navaratri. Navaratri is a very important Hindu festival celebrated in India, which is devoted to Goddess Durga. The festival is celebrated with great reverence and faith across the country. And here in Prashanti Nilayam, Navaratri, or better known as Dasara, is celebrated in all its grandeur through three very important functions. First is the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna. Second, the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha. And third, the Grama Seva done by the students of Swami's University. And the celebration stretches over a period of 9 days, with each of the 9 days being dedicated to one of the 9 forms of goddesses. So talking about the story behind the Navaratri festival, it can be explained through the Puranic stories mentioned in the Hindu scriptures. The legend, which many people know, goes like this. Mahishasura was the mighty demon who worshipped Shiva and obtained the power of eternity. And soon he started killing and harassing innocent people, and he set out to win all the 3 lokas. Now the gods in the Swargaloka, they appealed to Lord Shiva to find a way to get rid of this demon and to protect the world from the atrocities of Mahishasura. The trinity of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva united their powers and created a divine female warrior known as Goddess Durga. Now Mahishasura, when he saw the divine beauty of Goddess Durga, he was mesmerized, and he was so fascinated by Goddess Durga's beauty that he approached her with the intention of marriage. Now Goddess agreed to marry him, but put forth a condition. She said Mahishasura would have to win her over in a battle. Now Mahishasura, as proud as he was, he agreed immediately, and the battle began, and it continued for 9 nights. And at the end of the 9th night, Goddess Durga beheaded Mahishasura. The 9 nights came to be known as Navaratri, while the 10th day was called Vijayadashmi. That is the 10th day that brought the triumph of good over evil.
Shankari Saishwari.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, as we know, every festival in India has a deeper significance and an inner meaning. So what is the significance behind the festival of Navratri? Now, we all know that Navratri is one of the most auspicious times of the year. And during these 9 nights, we contemplate on the divine aspect of the Mother, who is present in everything around us. This energy that pervades the entire universe manifests as 3 divine beautiful forms of Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati. And the same divine energy rests latent within each and every one of us, waiting to be awakened. In 1988, Swami had explained the significance of Navaratri in a divine discourse. And here is what Swami very lovingly said that day. Swami said, "The Supreme Shakti manifests herself in the form of Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati. Durga grants us energy, physical, mental and spiritual. Lakshmi bestows on us not just money, but intellectual wealth, character wealth, the wealth of goodness and health." Because Swami says health is also wealth. "Saraswati bestows on us intelligence,
the capacity for intellectual inquiry and the power of discrimination. Hence, Navratri, or the festival of nine nights, is celebrated in order to proclaim to the world the power of the Divine Mother. Swami says, one's own mother is the combination of all these divine beings because she provides you with energy, wealth and intelligence. She constantly desires your advancement in life and hence represents all the three goddesses. Recognizing one's mother as the very embodiment of all divine forces, one must show reverence to her and treat her with love. This is the true message that the Navaratri festival gives us.
Jai Durga Lakshmi Saraswati Sai Jagan Mata.
Welcome back, dear listeners. So we spoke about the Puranic story behind the festival of Navaratri and also spoke about what Swami had said about the inner significance of the festival. Now, let's move on to what each of these goddesses, of goddess of Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati, what does each of them truly represent? Now, the Hindus believe that goddess Durga protects her devotees from the evils of the world and at the same time removes their miseries. Durga Devi is known by many names across the country like Kali, Bhagwati, Bhavani, Ambika, Lalita, Gauri, Jaya, Rajeshwari, etc. And goddess Durga incarnated as the united power of all divine beings who offered her the required physical attributes and weapons to kill the demon Mahishasura. Now, in the festival of Navaratri, the first three nights of Navaratri, they are dedicated to worshipping Shakti in the form of Durga. Goddess Durga represents strength and power, and she is the vanquisher of evil. And of course, here by evil, we mean the negative tendencies inside us, the bad qualities that affect each and every human being. And she destroys that evil and anything that will hamper us from getting to our ultimate goal, which is realizing our divinity. So during these three nights, when we tune in to the cosmic energy of Mother as Goddess Durga, we are in fact calling on her to remove all that is not needed from within us, so that we may be cleansed and we are ready to move on to the next stage of our journey towards divinity. Now, Goddess Durga is depicted as having 8 or 10 hands. These represents 8 quadrants or 10 directions in Hinduism. Its spiritual significance can be explained that this means the goddess protects her devotees from all directions. Like how Swami says, I am in you, around you, above you, below you. And the lion that Mother Durga rides on represents power, will and determination. Mother Durga riding the lion symbolizes her mastery over all these qualities. This suggests to the devotee that one has to possess all this quality to get over the demon of ego. And Devi Durga stands on a lion in a fearless pose of Abhayam Mudra, signifying assurance of freedom from fear. The Universal Mother seems to be saying to all her devotees, surrender all actions and duties unto me, and I shall release thee from all your fears.
Jagadodarini Mata Durga, Jagadodarini Mata. Jagadodarini Mata Durga, Jagadodarini Mata. Jago jago ma, jago jago ma, jago jago ma janani. Jago jago ma, jago jago ma, jago jago ma janani. Jago jagado darini ma, jagado darini ma, jagado darini ma, jagado darini ma. Jago jago ma, jago jago ma, jago jago ma janani. He Durga Devi Rana Chandi Devi, he Shiva Ramana jago ma. Jago jagado darini ma, jago jagado darini ma, jagado darini mata Durga. Jagadodarini Ma.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now the first thing we tend to associate Goddess Lakshmi with when we hear her name is of course wealth. You know, let's not stereotype wealth to monetary matters alone. Because Goddess Lakshmi is also considered as Mother Goddess when it comes to providing wealth in its 16 forms. So what are the 16 forms of wealth? Well, the wealth of knowledge, intelligence, strength, valor, beauty, victory, fame, ambition, morality, gold and other wealth, food grains, bliss, happiness, health and longevity, and virtuous offsprings. Goddess Lakshmi is depicted as a beautiful woman with golden complexion who has four hands sitting or standing on a fully bloomed lotus and holding a lotus bud, which stands for beauty, purity and fertility. Her four hands represent the four ends of human birth. That is dharma or righteousness, kama or desires, artha or wealth, and moksha or liberation from the cycle of birth and death. And cascades of gold coins are seen flowing from her hands, suggesting that those who worship her gain wealth. She always wears gold-embroidered red clothes. Red symbolizes activity and the golden lining indicates prosperity. However, it is very important to remember that most important wealth to yearn for is not really all that is listed above. It is most important to yearn for spiritual wealth at all times. And when we gain, understand and embody the spiritual knowledge from the divine, we are in turn allowing ourselves to experience who we truly are, divine beings. And this is the only purpose of our human lives, to remember and return to the divinity that we really are. So for the following 3 nights of Navaratri, as we worshipped and we offered our salutations to Divine Mother in the beautiful form of Goddess Lakshmi, I hope we all prayed and asked that we are bestowed with the highest form of spiritual wealth, and not just for worldly wealth, money and gold, so that we may recognize that inherent divinity that lies in each and every one of us. Three nights of Navaratri are dedicated to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of knowledge and arts, who represents the free flow of wisdom and consciousness. She is often revered as the mother of the Vedas. It is believed that Goddess Saraswati endows human beings with the power of speech, the power of wisdom, and the power of learning. She has four hands representing the four aspects of human personality in learning. That is, the mind, the intellect, alertness, and ego. She has sacred scriptures in one hand and a lotus, which is the symbol of true knowledge, in the second hand. And with her other two hands, she plays the music of love and life on a string instrument called the Veena. Mother Saraswati is dressed in white, which is the symbol of purity, and she rides on a white swan, symbolizing sattva-guna, or purity and discrimination. Now, the learned people of the world, they attach greater importance to the worship of Mother Saraswati. As a practice, devotees worship her for knowledge and wisdom, and they believe that only Saraswati can grant them moksha, the final liberation of the soul. And similarly, during Navaratri, after removing all negative qualities by Goddess Durga and allowing spiritual wealth to grow within by Goddess Lakshmi, the final three nights are spent in contemplation of the wealth of spirituality attained, which is transformed into knowledge. Shakti, as the energy of Saraswati, helps us to put that spiritual knowledge to good use for a higher purpose and cause in this material world.
Dan do,
vidya bodhi.
Sarasvati Jnan Do
listeners. Let us now move on to two very important aspects of Navaratri celebrations in Prashanti Nilayam, the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna and the annual Gram Seva, which is done by the students and staff of Swami's University. Now, here the Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna just concluded. So, what is this grand Yajnam? What is its purpose? How is it held? Now here is a beautiful narrative that will allow us to relive the entire exhilarating process of the Yajnam as it was held in Swami's Divine Presence. On 6th October 1961, the first ever Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna was conducted at Prashanti Nilayam with the sole purpose of bringing about the welfare of all humanity. And since then, the festival of Dasara has regularly witnessed this celebrated event. Vedic chants reverberate and charge the air during this weekend, during this week-long event of the Vedic personification presided by the Veda Purusha himself, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And venerated priests consider the participation in this yajna as a boon from gods. The chief priest, called the Brahma of the yajna, leads them on the first day of the yajna, chanting mantras in a procession to the Purnachandra Hall. And groups of nadas, nadaswaram and drums herald the start of the procession of the yajna from the Sai Kulwant Hall to the auditorium. A richly adorned Sai Gita and later Satya Gita used to lead the procession, followed by various musicians and priests chanting hymns. Of course, the students of Swami's University would join the priests in the chanting of the Vedas. Meanwhile, the throng of thousands of people is already in raptures, for the Lord has come on the stage to bless them with His darshan. The yajna proper begins with the ceremonial lighting of the sacred fire amidst the chanting of the Vedas. And in keeping with the tradition, two priests rotate one piece of wood to and fro against a stationary block of wood, while a third priest exerts necessary pressure to generate the heat that is required to ignite in the friction area. So a small spark is nursed with expert care, and very soon the sacrificial pit is transformed into a merrily blazing fire. And Swami is seated on a chair atop the stage, watching all this with an air of an uninvolved spectator. Now, around the altar sit three or four priests reciting the Vedic hymns as they pour clarified butter into the flames. This is the Rudra Homam, an invocation to Lord Shiva, the destroyer of all evil. The central altar is flanked on one side by a group of students chanting Vedam, and on the other side by a group of distinguished experts who has attained mastery over the Veda. They recite the Yajurveda, advertise on yajnas and ceremonial acts, and both these groups simultaneously chant the hymn so loud and clear that the atmosphere of Prashanti Nilayam resounds to their vibrations. Then another priest performs Surya Namaskar, or worship of the sun as a visible symbol of the Supreme. And he does that to the left of the sacrificial pit. He circumambulates around the offerings, chanting hymns, and then prostrates more than 100 times a day. But when Swami is present, the priest never misses the chance of going around Swami, the source of all energy, and prostrates at Swami's lotus feet. Meanwhile, the other priests recite sacred epics like Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagavatam, and even the Devi Bhagavatam during the period of the entire yajna. And yet another priest worships the Sri Chakra, a mystic drawing representing the Supreme Mother.
Jaya Jaga Jaga.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, continuing with the narration, describing the beautiful Veda Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna and the other proceedings that is to happen during Navaratri in Swami's divine presence. Every day in the evening, the Sai Kulwant Hall is filled to its fullest capacity. And here, the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha takes place, where Swami blesses some selected students and elders to address the gathering on various spiritual topics. And above all, He Himself speaks every day, elucidating the most sublime of spiritual topics in the most simplest possible way. Now, the eighth day of Navaratri is the Ayudha Puja, when all the instruments of work are worshipped. Swami comes to the garage near the Sai Kulwant Hall, where all the cars used by Swami would be kept, and then all the cars decorated very beautifully. Now Swami gets into each of the car and gives the driver an opportunity to drive him few feet to front in the respective vehicles. But the moment to watch out for is when He ascends the golden chariot. That would be a sight for the gods. And the final day of the yajna is on Vijayadashmi day, the 10th day, when the Purnahuti or the valedictory offering is made. The day begins with an extraordinary manifestation of spiritual fervor amongst the pandit and the participants of the yajna. Everyone in the Purnachandra hall is expectantly waiting to see Swami accept the final offering of the yajna. When the prescribed number of offerings have been completed, the priests sit on either side of the sacrificial altar, and Swami ascends the stage amidst the chanting of the Vedic hymns and seats Himself on a pedestal behind the sacrificial fire. And when the chanting reaches a crescendo, Swami, with a sudden wave of His hand, would manifest number of precious gems. As they shine in brilliance, He offers them one by one unto the sacrificial fire. And everyone present in the vast Purnachandra hall is filled with awe on witnessing this most sacred and divine act, the Purnahuti. The priests then make their grand offerings to the Veda Purusha. The priest circumambulates Swami and one by one prostrate at His feet. Grateful indeed they are for having been chosen to officiate in a yajnam conducted by God Himself. A few minutes later, Swami comes down the stage with a priest following Him, holding sacred water in a bowl. Swami, holding a big brush in His hand, dips it in the holy water and sprinkles it on all the devotees seated in the hall. As Bhagwan goes around the place sprinkling holy water on the staff and the students and the young and the old, the men and the women who are seated inside or outside the Purnachandra. In short, everyone is blessed by this holy shower of divine grace. The crowd simply goes delirious on receiving this great blessing. As a grand finale in the yesteryears on the Purnahuti day, there was also the famous Vibhuti Abhishekam, where Swami churned an upturned empty vessel to bathe the statue of Shirdi Baba in a continuous shower of sacred ash. And thus comes to a close the yajna and dasara. But the message that Swami gives through this enchanting festival is engraved forever in the hearts of everybody who witnessed it or even read about it. Swami says, the heart of man itself is the sacrificial fire altar. The pangs of desires are the tongues of flame. The evil that is in man is the offering that goes into the fire, and the treasure of unruffled ananda is the ultimate gain. And that is the real yajna that you have to perform every day in your life.
Karunamayi
Usual affair that takes place during the festival of Navaratri is the annual Gram Seva, which is conducted by the students and the staff of Swami's University. It is a wonderful sight to see hundreds of students circumambulating the mandir, singing bhajans, and then proceeding on their journey to put Swami's message of love into action. Those days Swami used to in fact stand in front of the mandir and watch the boys when the circumambulation would go on until the last boy left the mandir. And then students then carried along with them dhotis, saris, along with tamarind rice and laddu to be given as prasadam to all the villages what they have chosen for the Gram Seva. So instead of me speaking about the Gram Seva, let's listen to a presentation made by four of Swami's students, Brother Deepak Anand, Brother Vineet, Brother Amit and Brother Sri Krishna, on what they learned from the Swami's Gram Seva.
Gram Seva was another manifestation of Bhagwan's divine love. It set the benchmark for the humanity to strive for and achieve. Not because of our efficiency in terms of being able to plan for it and execute it. No. But because of the effectiveness it had in transforming the hearts of people and infusing in them a spirit of love and faith in God.
Actually, I recall a very touching incident in this regard. It was in the weavers' colony in Hindupur. An old lady was waiting for us, and when we offered the prasadam to her, she broke down and said, My two sons have passed away. I really don't have any support in life. Give me a photo of Bhagwan. His name is now my only recourse. She took the sari that Bhagwan had sent for her, kept it to her bosom and wept.
But not just the recipients of Bhagwan's prasadam were the ones to be benefited. We, the students of Bhagwan who were chosen by him and given this unique and exclusive privilege, also benefited in more ways than one. Bhagwan says, practical knowledge is most important. And that is what we learned with a hands-on experience in managing a project of such gigantic proportions in terms of planning. We had gone to the whole area and made maps to our requirement covering every village and every linking road. With thousands of students going to 600 villages and 5 big towns, with a population of many lakhs in 50 vehicles traveling in different directions, we thought an adaptive structure of organization would be most appropriate. But the real lesson in adaptiveness came from Bhagwan himself, who scaled up the whole project from covering a few thousand people in a cluster of villages in the beginning to covering of big townships with population of 1.5 to 2 lakhs on a single day. And still, we could do it with the same manpower, with the same resources, with the same infrastructure, without compromising a little bit on quality. Sometimes we ourselves used to sit back and wonder how.
Perhaps a little reason for this was the dedication, cooperation and the discipline of all those who participated in the Gram Seva. The discipline did not come out of force, but it came from the source. If you remember, the Gram Seva was conducted during the vacation, but all the students stayed back so enthusiastically and converted their holidays into holy days. The Gram Seva had become Ram Seva. And for the Gram Seva, Bhagwan had set all the goals clearly for us. He had told us that every house should get prasadam, a pair of clothes, at their doorstep, before their lunchtime, and without fail.
And that became like our vision statement. When we had to go to a cluster of villages in Hindupur, many of you would remember that the river was overflowing a few feet above the level of the bridge. We could see the people waiting for us on the opposite bank. It was like so close and yet so far. Keeping Bhagwan's vision in mind, we travelled 40 kilometers or 4 hours of arduous journey on bumpy village roads. But finally when we reached there, it was a bumper harvest of love and joy. Bhagwan Sai Baba Ki Jai, Bhagwan Sai Baba Ki Jai, and Sai Rams greeted us. They came towards us like as if it was one home, one family and they helped us in every aspect of distribution.
Perhaps one thing we are forgetting is that it was Bhagwan who took care of those minutest details. You remember, when we used to go for seva, Swami used to tell us, serve with love and humility during the distribution.
Brother, while we boys went for distribution during daytime, going to distant villages and sharing our love with them, let's not forget that it was the students of the Anandpur Women's Campus who used to spend the whole night preparing prasadam and packaging it with love. Singing bhajans, chanting Vedam, they used to infuse the prasadam with divine vibrations, and really that made all the difference. If the wheel of Gram Seva turned every day, let's not forget that they were an important force behind it.
But what made the wheel really move was Bhagwan's involvement and guidance. It was His omnipresence. If at all, not even a single vehicle broke down during the entire fortnight. It was His omnipresence. If the schedule was not broken even for a single day for the entire fortnight due to any inclement weather. And at the end of the day, when we used to come back from Seva, we all used to rush to Bhagwan, and the feedback used to flow not from us to Him, but from Him to us.
Truly, Bhagwan was a force that made us work. And we used to realize that it is not we who are working. It is Bhagwan who is working for Himself, for those forms of human beings whom He considers so close to Him. There was really a feeling of oneness. And with that feeling of oneness, we again used to go back to the villages. And I remember a small instance in this regard. We had gone to a particular village in Kadri. And when we were coming back, we saw a young man coming from the fields. As usual, we stopped and asked him, "Did you receive Bhagwan's prasadam?" He said, "No." But then he took a few paces back and said, "Don't touch me or come closer, because I belong to the most deprived section of the society and I live in a separate place called Tanda." The brothers anyway went close to him and offered the prasadam with all the love and affection. And one of them kept his hand on his shoulder and said, "Bhagwan Baba says that we are all children of one same God. Then in that respect, are we not brothers?" That young man could not hide his tears. And he went away saying, "Yes, yes, Sai Baba is God. Sai Baba is God." Many were such experiences that we had, which transformed us during this Gram Seva. Thank you, brothers Vineet and Deepak. Let us continue our journey through this Gram Seva and now move on to the actual site of prasadam distribution. Here's the village. The lorries have just arrived, and let's imagine the boys have just got down and they're distributing prasadam in the huts. What happens next? To know about this, let me invite our brothers, Brother Amit and Brother Shri Krishna, to join me over here. They will tell us what exactly happened in the villages. When the prasadam was given, what was the response? How did they feel? What was the feeling with which they received this prasadam? Brothers Amit and Shri Krishna.
Bhagwan's life is His message. And His life has been one continuous saga of love, of pure and selfless love, of giving and forgiving. And He wanted that we students also experience that joy of giving. And so He directed that we should go and serve each one of the people in their houses, at their doorstep, and experience the joy of giving. Bhagwan explained to us a lot of important things. He told us, why is it that He was giving clothes and food as prasadam and not something else? He said, "Bhikshanam deha raksharthaṁ vastaram śīta nivāraṇam." That is, food is needed to foster the body, while clothes are needed to protect it from inclement weather. Thus, these are the two most important things which anyone needs. And that is why He was giving to them what they needed most and not what they desired most. Swami also explained to us how this food got transformed into prasadam. He said the food was cooked with the constant chanting of God's name. It was transported with the chanting of God's name. It was given with God's name and received with God's name. Thus, the food got transformed into prasadam. But mind you, Swami gave not only food and clothes. He sent a lot of other things, a lot of stationery items, pen, pencils, crayons, notebooks for the small school-going children also. And while there were saris and dhotis for the elderly people, there were skirts, shorts, t-shirts for the smaller children. Thus, there was something for everybody.
Truly, Amit. And when the village folk knew that it was Bhagwan's prasadam that we were taking to them, they were so happy to receive us.
Yes, Sri Krishna. Remember how they used to welcome us? They used to be waiting for us there with decorations, festoons and greetings. At many places, they even put water. They should sprinkle water on the roads where we had to walk. And they had made beautifully decorated shrines for bhajans to take place. Actually, Bhagwan had told us that before we started distribution of prasadam, we all of us must go around the village doing Nagar Sankirtan and Vedam chanting. And just imagine, hundreds of youth going around singing the glory of God with all their hearts. And what an impact it has. There was a subtle change in environment. People themselves used to come and join us. And we used to feel that there was no more negativity, no more despair or despondency. There was only love. Love and joy in every heart. And that is the love we experienced, we felt when we went from house to house giving prasadam.
Certainly. In fact, in each house that we went, they welcomed us with beaming faces and broad smiles. Let me narrate a very touching experience that has captured my heart in this regard. It was one day during distribution that we went up to a household in a nearby village. The elders there were especially inclined to greet us. Well, upon inquiry, we found that the Annaprashna ceremony, wherein a newborn is fed food for the first time in his life, was in progress. They were extremely overwhelmed with joy that we had arrived at just the right time. For them, it was not a mere coincidence that we had come there then. It was Bhagwan's direct blessing. He had sent them what they wanted most. And you know, just then, instead of feeding the child the ceremonial soft-boiled rice, they gave it the sweet that Bhagwan had sent. The child had got prasadam as its first morsel in its life. Watching their touching action, we were touched. For it is then that we realized how much Bhagwan meant to them. The prasadam was just a token of his infinite grace and compassion that he is always ready to shower upon those who need it. And the villagers were very grateful, in fact, to receive the prasadam from us.
So, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of today's presentation. We hope today's segment has given you a glimpse of the grand celebration of Navaratri festival in Prashanti Nilayam and the inner meaning behind it. So till we meet next week, this is Chandu Vijay signing off with a prayer that may all the beings in all the worlds be happy, happy and happy. And at 3:30 p.m. you'll be joined by Brother Sai Prasad with the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandeshachari.
का वरदान दो
मुझे भक्ति का वरदान दो
मुझे भक्ति का वरदान दो
मुझे भक्ति का वरदान दो
करुणामयी साईं
ఓం శ్రీ సాయిరామ్ లవ్ టు లవ్ కార్యక్రమం ద్వారా